Would you like to accelerate your career and reach your full potential in just minutes a day? Welcome to the LeadX Show with New York Times bestselling author and Inc. 500 entrepreneur, Kevin Cruz.
What are the seven biggest traps in life and work? Hello, everyone. Kevin Cruz here. And in just a minute, we're going to talk about outsmarting the seven hidden obstacles to success. But first, congratulations on being the CEO of your future. Content people seek out entertainment. Ambitious people seek out education. Now, ambition sometimes has a negative connotation, but to me, it just means you want to become more so you can make a bigger difference in the world. Please tell your friends, tell your family members. The LeadX Show is the smartest way to start your day. And free for you, don't forget to download our ebook, Richard Branson's 7 Secrets to Leadership at leadx.org/Branson. Today's quick career tip, be the only. What does that mean? Well, most people just describe themselves. In a sales pitch, you say, well, we've been in business 25 years. We have 500 employees. That's boring. Or maybe it's a job interview. Tell me about yourself. And you start off, got my bachelor's at Rutgers. I got my MBA from Temple. That's boring. Don't describe. You want to position yourself uniquely. So you can say that your company is the only one who uses the rapid process to guarantee quality. Or the LeadX podcast is the only show that offers a career tip of the day. Get creative. Whatever you need to do to stand out and be the only. Be unforgettable. Our guest today has practiced the seven habits since birth, and he's the former co-COO of Franklin Covey. He's an expert in leadership, complex sales, and the concept of interdependence. He is currently the co-CEO of SM Cov, a learning and development company working in over 80 countries. He's also the managing partner at Thomas Leland. His new book is Trap Tales, Outsmarting the Seven Hidden Obstacles to Success. Our guest is David M.R. Covey. David, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Oh, my pleasure. And we're going to talk about trap tales in just a minute, but I always start with the same first question. Will you share with our listeners a time when you failed and what did you learn from it? Because we want to learn from that failure too.
Yeah. So my failure happened very early in my career, which I think is a good thing because you can learn a lot from your failures. But I was just a college graduate and I was working for Procter & Gamble. And I was in Phoenix, Arizona, and I was selling for them some of their soap and food and beverage and paper brands. And I did not know how to sell those products. It was a very difficult thing to do. I didn't really know very much about the grocery trade, and it's a very tough, cutthroat business. And I think in my first 6 months, you know, I didn't do very well. I wasn't certainly living up to my expectations. So I had to kind of relearn, you know, kind of a whole new trade and how to sell in that business and how to connect with the grocery managers and the wholesale managers. And so that was a very, very difficult experience for me. It was right after, you know, right out of college, and I was ready to conquer the world and thought I could. But I was quickly put back in my place after some failures in my initial first 6 months. So what I learned from that is, you know, you really got to study every situation. You can't apply all the same things that you've learned to every, you know, job situation. Every job is unique and different. And I hadn't done enough study and research on, you know, what I needed to do differently. So that's the good thing about failures, though, is that you fall down and, you know, you either, you know, whine and complain or you pick yourself up and you figure out what you did wrong so you can improve.
Yeah. And boy, there's nothing that'll humble you more than sales, right? I mean, by definition, you're hearing no's more often than you hear the yeses.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I think sales is the ultimate job for, you know, learning because you get a lot of rejection. That's for sure.
That's right. So, David, your new book is Trap Tales, Outsmarting the Seven Hidden Obstacles to Success. And it's a fable. It's a story about a man named Michael. So tell our listeners briefly about Michael and the situation we sort of find him in when we start the book.
Yeah. So actually, the protagonist is Alex. The son is named Michael. So the protagonist is Alex. and his wife, Kim, and they have two children, Laura and Michael. It's probably where you got the Michael from.
Completely my bad. You're right. It's Alex.
And so Alex, this is a story. And when Stefan and I started writing this book, we started to write it kind of more as the regular kind of self-help, personal success. And after about 3 weeks, we were like so sick of it. We just couldn't stand it. It's like, we don't need another book like that. So we said, you know what? Let's be unique. Let's be different. Let's write it in a story. I got a lot of inspiration from Ken Blanchard books, and Patrick Lencioni, writes in this style as well. Right. So we decided to write it in the form of a story. So the protagonist is Alex and his wife, Kim. They live in Los Angeles, and they have two kids, Laura and Michael. And the story takes us through these seven traps that Alex finds himself in. He's struggling a little bit with his relationship with his wife. And we go through all of the seven traps in this story. So I think it's a fun and engaging and interesting way to talk about the seven traps and, versus the old style and approach of, self-help and personal success books.
Yeah, I wanted to start and point that out to our listeners, because certainly there are some authors who have used the fable approach, but it's still fairly rare. And I think that this is especially effective given the material you covered and the obstacles themselves. And of course, you talk about seven traps in this kind of a short format podcast. We can't cover them all, but you talk about the money trap, the focus trap, change trap, learning trap, career, and purpose. But the first one you talk about is actually, one that really spoke to me. It's the relationship trap. And you say, many people are married on paper, but not in spirit. And that really hit me. So tell us more about that.
Yeah, so the relationship trap. So Alex finds himself in this trap for sure. He was raised in kind of a well-to-do family, and his wife Kim was raised in kind of more of a middle class, where her parents lost a lot of the money. So she's more careful and conservative in his spending, where Alex is a little bit more extravagant and is willing to run up a lot of debt. So in the story, what we find or what we see in life is that we see people who are married, but they still operate as if they're a married single. So in other words, they haven't got on the same page on, three main things that we mention in the book. The first is, around finances, how we're going to manage our finances and who's going to take care of finances. I mean, finances end up being one of the, money issues, and debt end up being one of the main issues why people separate or get divorced. So you got to get on the same page on that. If you have kids, how are you going to raise them? Child rearing philosophies can be very, very different from family to family. And so, two people come into a marriage and they have very different philosophies. And so you got to decide, how you're going to raise and discipline your children when that discipline is required. And then the last is, what are the roles going to be in your family? So in this situation, you have both Alex and Kim working outside of the home. But Alex grew up with more of a traditional family, where his dad worked outside the home, but his mom was a mom and a homemaker and stayed at home. And so he's used to that, and he's expecting that Kim is going to do all of the housework and take care of everything just like his mother did. And yet she's working just like he is. So, and I think in today's society, we see a lot of that, unfortunately for a lot of the men, this is where we need to step up to the plate a little bit more,
right?
And take on more of the household duties and responsibilities. But that's the third thing that we suggest is, how are the household duties going to be divided and managed? And the reality is that a lot of people have not come on they're not on the same page as it relates to these three things. And so it is a relationship trap, and they operate as a married single.
Yeah, I that term, operating as a married single, I hadn't heard that phrase before, and I realized first as a divorced guy, I could, certainly see that in myself in the past and other relationships, and realize that many people find themselves in that. And I think the way you talk about this trap is so interesting, because it's whether it's the money or how to raise the kids or the family roles, too many of us will just automatically think, okay, I'm right. she's wrong, and so we, I guess, have to negotiate in the middle, although I'm going to have a sense like, well, it's now not perfect because I was right. And you say that it's because we actually think that our upbringing was superior to our partners. I thought that was a very good, challenging thought.
Yeah, so it's very true. I mean, we think that the way that we were raised is the right way to raise our kids or the right way to manage things. And we don't consider that, you know, the value system of our spouse or partner may be very, very different. And so we tend to look at the way that we were raised as the right way or superior way. We also are unwilling to change a lot of people in a relationship, or we only agree to change if our partner changes first. And of course, if we operate by that mentality, you know, we're going to be waiting a long time. So the best approach is to, you know, be willing to make changes first. And I think that when you do that, you find that your spouse or partner reciprocates. If you wait, they tend to wait as well, and then nothing ends up happening.
Yeah, I was going to say, you'll both be waiting a long time for something to change then, right?
Yeah.
So the other trap, I guess I'm kind of bookending the traps because we just talked about the first one, but the trap seven is the purpose trap. That also I thought was really impactful. So describe the purpose trap for us.
So the purpose trap is the trap of accumulation or acquiring things, which we think is the purpose of life. And it's often, I call it the ultimate lie that we don't discover until the end. And I say that because if you look at the deathbed literature, it's very interesting. The deathbed literature, you know, is interviews with people who are on the verge of dying, and they talk about what's important to them and what they care about. And guess what? They don't talk about money. They don't talk about, you know, successes or accolades or awards they got. What they care about is their relationships, and they care about service that they provided, and they care about their experiences. And those are the things that they care about the most. And unfortunately, a lot of people don't discover that until the end, meaning the end of their life. And so we have this accumulation mentality where we're conditioned to believe that the purpose of life is to accumulate more stuff. We're in the continual pursuit of happiness, and we think that buying more things or acquiring more things is going to make us happy. And then we're caught up in this whole competitive consumption, where we view acquisitions as a measuring stick for success. So we look at our neighbor, and they have all these toys, and they have all these things that they do, and they have a bigger house. And so we try to keep up with them, and we think that life is about, you know, acquiring things. And we think the more that we have, the more successful we must be. And that's just simply not the case. You know, true happiness, and every one of the traps we talk about, you know, what's the epiphany breakthrough,
right,
that's going to lead us to get out of the trap. The epiphany is another way of saying insight, you know, the insight that will lead to a breakthrough in behavior. And we talk about that true happiness really comes from providing service, making meaningful contributions, and building lasting relationships. And possessions can play a supporting role, but they shouldn't play the primary role. And I think that's where most people get it wrong, is that they think possessions and acquiring things is the primary role, is the purpose of life, and it's not. Relationships are the most important things. Study the deathbed literature, believe it, because we're going to all find ourselves there one day. And rather than discovering this this idea at the end of our lives, why not discover it now?
Yeah, that's so powerful, David. And I can't. I mean, we just look at the, you know, the epidemic of anxiety and how many people are on antidepressants, anti-anxiety pills, and I almost wonder if a big part of this isn't this, as you say, I love this term, the ultimate lie, that we're supposed to be happy all the time and that things will get us to happiness. You know, accumulation will get us to happiness. And as you say, that's not, unfortunately, we find that many of us will find that out too late, that it's really not about that. It's really about the experience is over things, the relationships, et cetera. It's sad that, you know, however we've fallen into this thing of objects will lead to happiness, it's a shame. And I just feel like it's doing everybody a disservice, and we should just be pursuing meaning more than happiness.
Yeah. For us, this was really illustrated when we moved to Australia for 2.5 years. I was just 30 years old, and this was really my first kind of management responsibility. that I had at Franklin Covey. And I was going to manage the office there in Australia. And the company told us that we could ship our household items either slow boat or by air. If we did it slow boat, it would take 2 months. By air, it would take 2 weeks. But if we did it slow boat, they would pay us the difference that it would cost between air and slow boat. So in other words, we get the extra money in cash.
Right.
So we decided to send our stuff by slow boat. And when you're moving across, literally across the world, you really think, do I really, really need this? And what we did as a family is that we left 90% of what we had. We left it. We put it in a storage unit. And we only took 10% of what we had. And when we got to Australia, we found that we literally missed none of the possessions that we had. I hadn't been married very long either, so it wasn't like, you know, been a couple decades accumulating stuff. But for us, it helped us realize that, you know, there's really not that much long-term happiness and joy in possessions. You know, they can provide some temporary pleasures. They can serve a role, but real happiness comes in the relationships and the experiences that we build together.
Yeah, and I like the caveat you put. You're not saying that possessions are bad. You're not saying you're bad if you have a nice car or something like that. But you're saying it's clearly not the purpose of life. It's not the primary object to get you to happiness.
That's exactly right.
So, David, before we wrap up, I want you to challenge us. Like, what's one specific thing we can do today to get closer to success?
So I was thinking about this. I would the one suggestion I would have is to repair a broken relationship or strengthen a weak relationship with someone you care about. And I think that we have a lot of to-do things on our list, and we'll always have that, and that's never going to change. But if we really are serious about relationships, we need to think about, you know, where do I have a relationship that's broken, where it needs, you know, repair, or where could I strengthen a relationship this week? And obviously the ones that you care about. So I would just ask your listeners to reflect on that, and then to go about, you know, doing that with one relationship. Don't try to tackle too many things, you know, at once and say, okay, well, I've got 10 people, you know, that I care about. You know, that's probably too many things to try to do. Just pick one and go about repairing and strengthening that relationship.
I think if they had 10 people, I would ask them to see if there was a pattern involved in some way. So, David, thanks for coming on the LeadX show. And will you tell our listeners how they can find out more about you and your work?
So they can find more about Trap Tales by just, you know, if you're like me, you buy books on Amazon. So you can buy it on Amazon, or you can buy it at any of the major booksellers stores. And then and we also have a website, traptales.com. And then our business, SM Cov. SM is my business partner, Stefan Martix, who's also the co-author of Trap Tales. So he's the SM and I'm the Cov. That's where our company name came from. So it's www.smcov.com.
All right, friends, you've just been mentored by David M.R. Covey. Don't forget, you can get the links he just mentioned and the notes from this interview over at leadx.org. And you can get David's new book from amazon.com, your favorite bookstore. That's it for today's episode of the LeadX Show. Please subscribe to the show on iTunes. Leave a rating and review. It will take you about 60 seconds, but it's the single best way to help build the LeadX tribe. And until next time, remember, leadership is not a choice, because leadership is about influence, and you influence with your actions. And when you choose to be a bystander, you influence people around you when you speak out, but you're also influencing them when you choose to hold your tongue. It's not a choice. We are all leaders. Please lead with intent.